Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some very interesting guests. First, we're going to have Sergey Masenko, and he's going to be talking about gut microbiome and testing it. And in the second half, we're going to have Dr. Anthony Levinson talking about dementia and IgeriCare. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
Struggling with bipolar disorder is hard enough, but now a new study from Taiwan suggests these patients are 7 times more likely to develop Parkinson's disease. But U.S. experts caution that the absolute risk of developing Parkinson's, an incurable movement disease, is still very low for those with the mood disorder. For the study, researchers led by Dr. Mu Hong Chen of Taipei Veterans General Hospital reviewed health records for 56,000 people in Taiwan who were diagnosed with bipolar disorder between 2001 and 2009. They were compared to 225,000 people with no history of bipolar or Parkinson's. Both groups were tracked until late 2011. During the study period, 372 people with bipolar disorder, or 0.7%, developed Parkinson. This compared to 222, or 0.1%, of those who didn't have bipolar disorder. The study was published online May 22nd in the journal Neurology. It has long been known that lifestyle affects a person's risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Now, researchers report they have identified rare variants of 4 genes that may also play a part. For the study, an international team of scientists analyzed protein coding genes from nearly 21,000 people with type 2 diabetes and 25,000 people without diabetes across a range of ethnicities. That included people of European, African American, Hispanic Latino, East Asian, and South Asian ancestries. The genes identified in the study and the proteins they encode are potential targets for new diabetes medicines and may help improve understanding and treatment of the disease, according to the study authors. The study was published May 22nd in the journal Nature. Many people, including those who are overweight themselves, view people with obesity as less human or less evolved, new research reveals. In 4 online studies questioning more than 1,500 participants from the United States, the United Kingdom, and India, researchers also found that dehumanization of those with obesity predicted support for policies that discriminate against this group. We've obviously heard the way that people speak about people with obesity, said study author Inga Kersbergen. She's a research fellow at the University of Sheffield in England. In that sense, we'd be surprised if we didn't find anything, she said. But I don't think we were prepared for the magnitude of our findings. The study is published in the June issue of the journal Obesity. Your unhealthy eating habits could increase your risk of cancer as much as drinking alcohol can, new research reports. The Tufts University study found that poor diets cause about the same number of cancer cases as alcohol consumption does in the United States. The researchers said their modeling study estimated that dietary factors may have accounted for over 80,000 of the new invasive cancer cases reported in 2015, or about 5% of that year's total among U.S. adults. Alcohol was associated with 4-6% of cases. The study was published May 22nd in the journal JNCI Cancer Spectrum.
We have Sergey Masenko with us today, and he is the co-founder and CEO of Atlas Biomed. He's done lots of research on the gut health and the gut microbiome, so we're going to learn about that today. Welcome, Sergey. You there? We just may have... Are you there, Sergey?
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you now. Great. So welcome to Health First Radio. We're hearing so much more about the gut health now. What does that mean, gut health?
Yeah, well, this is a very interesting question, and thanks for asking this, Kathy. So, the gut health in the last several years has been pretty much associated with something that's called a microbiome. So this is basically the topic that we're going to talk about mostly today. Mm-hmm. So with the gut microbiome, what people mean is the composition of different microorganisms that inhabit people's guts. So that's quite a sensitive topic, and I really hope everyone has lunch today already. Yes, basically there are hundreds of trillions of different microorganisms that live inside our bodies. And it's only very recently that we have, and by saying we, I mean scientists and doctors all over the world, that we have kind of received an instrument to observe and to actually study all those microorganisms that populate our bodies. So if you actually compare the number of, you know, bacterial cells that live in your gut with the number of your own cells as a human organism, they will outnumber probably 3-1. So we are more bacterial kind of than we are actually human. So when we talk about gut health in the last several years, it's basically studying ourselves and our organism as a kind of an ecosystem of human cells and the bacterial cells and viruses and fungi that live in our gut.
So how many bacteria are there? Can you count them?
Yes. I mean, you know, but based on the, some of the latest data, there are 70 to 100 trillion bacterial cells that mostly live, actually, that they not only live inside our gut. This is the place they love the most because it's actually really dark. It's wet, and there's a lot of food falling from the sky, you know, all the time. That's why they really like it there. But they also actually, they populate almost pretty much every, you know, every square centimeter of our body. So live on top of our skin, in our hair, in our ears, everywhere. So, however, the most number of those cells are contained in our gut.
Okay. Is our gut really considered a separate organ?
Yes, pretty much. This is how the scientists and, you know, the some of the research like to call it nowadays. Not only, basically, the name came from, you know, us just very recently realizing the importance of all those bacteria to everything that relates to us. You know, starting from health and how that relates with inflammation, our own immune system, but also with the metabolism. Like all those bacteria that live in our gut, they actually help us metabolize and produce some of the very important components that are important for our own health as a human body, such as short-chain fatty acid, which is a very, very important thing that helps us basically fight the inflammation in our guts. It's like an anti-inflammatory compound that is mostly produced by the bacteria. So there are many other ways. And for example, our brains are now known to be connected with the bacteria in our gut, if you can imagine that. Mm-hmm. So the bacteria can also affect the way we think, the way we behave, the way we, you know, feel stressed or depressed. All of the things are pretty much now being linked with bacteria as well. I'm not saying this is the only factor, but it's one of the factors that are becoming more and more important.
Wonderful. It makes a huge shift to work on gut when you've got brain problems.
Exactly. I mean, there's a huge area of research, you know, on neurodegenerative diseases, but also things like anxiety and depression, how that's linked with the gut bacteria. A completely new link that we have just recently established.
Mm-hmm. And have we got new insights on how we process and metabolize our food?
Yeah, because we, you know, they say we are what we eat. Actually, it's not just that. We are what we and our bacteria eat. Because the part of the foods and the components of the food are being consumed by the bacteria. So one of them, like, the best thing they like is probably fibers. So, you know, eating plants and fruits, we've heard a lot of times that eating plants and, you know, and like vegetables and fruits is really good for your health. Well, now we know why, because one of the reasons for that is that bacteria really likes those fibers. So we don't metabolize it as a host organism. So it goes all the way through in our gut where the bacteria is actually eating it.
Mm-hmm. So this is what we actually call prebiotics when we're looking for prebiotics?
Yes, correct. This is what's also called a prebiotic or prebiotic supplements sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yes, so these are the things that really help us feed up the bacteria in our gut.
So, Sergi, what's your impression of everybody taking so many probiotics these days? Where do they fit, and what kind of amounts should you have?
Well, again, a very complicated question, I would say. So, first of all, it's really important to understand the difference between pro and prebiotics. So, when mm-hmm. we say probiotics, we're talking about food or supplements that contain live bacteria. So, mm-hmm. this could be things like probiotic supplements you can get from the pharmacy, or this could be like a yogurt or kefir, which is becoming, you know, increasingly popular in people's diets. So when we talk about probiotics, probably the most general conclusion that scientists are making nowadays is that there's no like a silver bullet. So there's no one product that fits all purposes.
Okay.
And of a, you know, personalized approach that's needed, you know, to understand what type of probiotic will fit your specific bacteria composition.
Mm-hmm. And is it possible to change your gut microbiome? How would you do it?
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about gut bacteria is this is something you can control. So it's not just something that's completely outside of your control. You know, you can change your diet. You can start taking probiotics. You can start taking prebiotics. These are all the things. And, of course, antibiotics, they have a huge, very often negative effect on the gut bacteria. So there are many ways you can affect your gut bacteria. Probably one of the kind of the best advice that you can get nowadays, you know, in terms of general advice on how to increase the balance of your gut bacteria is, you know, eat the rainbow, as they say. So try to diversify, different vegetables and fruits in your daily diet. Because we see a lot of people that, you know, they even think they eat a lot of vegetables and fruits, but when you start asking them, like, what types of vegetables and fruits you eat every day, it's more or less the same type of vegetables.
Yeah.
So diversity is really the key point here. So try to change and choose every day a little bit different types of products, you know, maybe with a different color.
Now, is your microbiome fairly receptive, or does it take a lot of time to make this shift when you change your foods?
Well, I would say it takes quite an effort to change the bacterial ecosystem, because it's a pretty sustainable ecosystem. So that means sometimes it takes a while for you to see the change. For example, if you take a normal diet and then you go crazy on Friday, you know, with the parties and, you know, maybe a little bit of alcohol, so this will probably not make such a, you know, dramatic effect on your gut bacteria. So what really matters here is kind of the time of the intervention that you're making. So you have to be pretty consistent with the change if you want to see the change in your microbiome. However, as I mentioned before, the change is possible. So this is what makes it such a powerful, you know, instrument for the research and medicine.
Okay. And refined sugar would be totally out when you're trying to heal a microbiome and make it function better?
Yes, I would say try to focus on fibers, which are long carbs. Which is something that's, you know, really, really beneficial for your bacteria.
Okay. And so at Atlas Biomed, you now have a gut health test. Can you tell me how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. So the test we currently sell, and we've just actually recently launched in Canada, which is a big announcement that we're making today, allows our customers to actually get a very kind of informative insights into their gut microbes. And we do that by supplying the kit, which is actually a stool sample collection device. Yes, sorry for this. What all you need to do is collect a tiny bit of your stool sample and send it back for us to analysis. And what we do is we analyze the DNA of bacteria that is contained in your stool sample. And by doing that, we're able to distinguish on average 500 different types of bacteria and quantify that different types of bacteria. And then we'll tell you how that affects your health, your nutrition, and basically what are the recommendations that, you know, that would work personally for you to improve the balance of your gut bacteria.
Okay, Sergi, we're going to have to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about these tests.